Deezer Originals.
This is Defending in Numbers.
Are you a massive fan of numbers? I'm assuming the answer is yes, and thank God, because this is Defending in Numbers, the podcast where we walk down the corridor of uncertainty, pretending to know a little bit more about football than we actually do. My name is Rob Armstrong, and I don't really know very much. I know West Ham won the World Cup in 1966. I know that black boots are the only thing that's really acceptable, and that's it, really. I know City are probably going to win the league, but someone who might disagree with me about Man City winning is hot take Jake the Snake Entwistle. Jake, do you disagree with me?
I do disagree with you because I like different coloured boots other than just black ones. So straight away, we've got a point of difference there.
But about Man City?
Man City, they probably will win
the league. Yeah, they probably will. Probably will win the league.
Yeah, that's probably fair enough.
And making his debut, the big dog in the yard, Adam Boltwood. How are you, Adam?
Very well. It's the first time I've ever been called that nickname. I appreciate it. I like it. It's got a nice ring to it.
That's what you saved as in my phone.
The big dog in the yard.
The big dog in the yard.
Change that. Just change it.
Yeah, that's what you saved. I've got you as a shortcut on my home screen as just the big dog.
I love it, mate. I love it.
It's right next to my shortcut for Deezer, where, of course, you can listen to this podcast.
That was smooth.
And iTunes and all the other places you can get your podcasts. But as soon as your first time on, I think you can spend the next 5 minutes just rating, reviewing, subscribing.
Oh, mate.
Leave a really nice review and share it to all your friends.
I'll do it.
Obviously.
I'm on it.
And all the listeners can do that too while we go into the first section, Week by Numbers.
The Week by Numbers.
The first number, I think it's only appropriate, seeing as we've got Boltwood here, that we start with his day rate of £174.4 million.
Yeah, easily.
Also, the cost of Man City's bench when they played Huddersfield this weekend. Huddersfield's lineup only cost £34.8 million, and that gets you just a mere Nicolas Otamendi. How much would you pay for an Otamendi, Boltwood?
Tenner, max.
A tenner, Jake? How much would you pay for an Otamendi?
I think he's actually had quite a good season.
Yeah, I know
that's really boring to say, but maybe he's starting to show that he was worth £34.8 million
Huddersfield. Yeah. City's starting lineup, that was £357.4 million. So I can't count very well, but I've got a feeling that's above £500 million.
Yeah, roughly. Yeah.
When you put the two together, that's £500 million worth of talent on the football pitch. And like we said, it looks like they might be winning the league, but it brings that age-old question of old Fraudiola. Is it a sign of his incredible managerial talent, or has he just spent £500 million or got, he hasn't spent it, but has he got a £500 million football team at his disposal?
I think it is a mixture of both, in terms that you can't build a team without money, or you can't build the sort of team you want without having money. But you've got to give it to him in the fact that this summer he went out and said, I'm in desperate need of some fullbacks. I'm in desperate need of some width. And he went out and bought Kyle Walker, who's one of the best ones in the Premier League, just absolutely rapid, so much width outright, and went and got Benjamin Mendy, who he was 50 million and he's not even included
and
in
he's
these
worth
numbers.
More for his Twitter stuff.
Exactly.
So yeah. Priceless on
that's
Twitter.
Extra 50 million.
They bought a social media expert rather than a left back. But so he's not even included this, and Delph, to be fair to him, has come in at left back and done the job to an extent, like high pass accuracy each game is an outlet. Mendy, when he comes back in, they'll be even better. But that game against Huddersfield was crazy, in the fact that, yeah, they won with a fluky goal, but if you look at the numbers behind that, they were completely dominant, and I can see them continuing that for the rest of the season.
I agree with Jake there. It's a mix of the two, because, yes, they've spent a ridiculous amount of money, but we're talking about the players he's brought in, like Kyle Walker and Benjamin Mendy, but for me, it's the players he already had at his disposal that he's improved. We just mentioned Otamendi there, who's obviously a lot better this season. Sterling, everyone's talking about how much he's improved him. I think he's broken his own record for goals in a season this campaign. It's only November, which is crazy. So that's the case in point there. Also, De Bruyne, who's like one of, if not the best player in the Premier League right now. So I think, yes, they have spent an absolutely insane £500 million on this squad. But at the same time, you have to give Guardiola the credit for coaching this team to taking them to another level.
I mean, I believe everything I read on the internet, and don't I believe all that Guardiola taught Raheem Sterling how to stand sideways.
Yeah, he did.
Has everyone seen the same clip as me?
Yeah. Just said, turn around a little bit. He's like, goal. That's
wow,
how it works.
12 goals already, just because of that movement.
Exactly. Yeah. We should all stand sideways a little bit more often. But does it also teach you, or is it Guardiola, sorry, that has taught them how to rack up that crazy amount of possession we saw the other day? You could say we've seen games like that before with like a newly promoted team against a title favourite and the possession is high, but 79.4% possession
is high.
Absolutely crazy. The fourth highest ever in the Premier League. I was looking at the other ones in the top five. I think the team with the higher amount of possession lost quite a lot of the other times. Liverpool versus Burnley, I think last year, I think was the top one. I think Liverpool had 80.2% or something and still
That's
lost.
Crazy.
But Man City, they're not Liverpool. Like Man City are
they are not
dominant and piling up this percentage of possession.
That's the thing. It's that they're the absolute pass masters, but they know how to use it. Like, a lot of teams get criticised for keeping possession, but it's on the edge of the box, whereas Man City is so decisive and their movements forward are breathtaking. And the fact that they came back from a goal behind, again, there was another... There's so many stats about this Man City great. Team this season, but that was the first time they've come back from a goal behind away from home in the Premier League at half-time since 1995. So they're just smashing everything. They've got currently the most wins in a row for the club, like a club record. They're 11 consecutive wins in the Premier League, and this is recording on a Tuesday, so on a Monday even. And there's potential to get the all-time record.
Jake, it is Tuesday.
I was questioning everything then. I was just like, oh my god, it's Monday.
The man has lost everything. He's lost
I've
his
lost stats. It this is like, oh, this is what happens this is what happens when you spend the whole day looking at the numbers for this. I'm completely washed.
Is it 13 games gone now?
Yeah,
they've got, is it 39 points?
37. Best ever.
That's the best ever. It's insane. So I think that does speak for itself.
Yeah, it's one draw, isn't it? They've won everything except one.
The only team to take points off them, Everton.
The mighty
Can you believe
Everton.
It? Can you believe it?
All right, let's move on to the next number. I'm going to take you back to 2011. That's the number. And I'm going to take you back to Arsenal versus Newcastle. Jake, you must have been, 17 back in 2011? You probably didn't know what day it was.
Definitely didn't know
you
what day it was.
You were sat there, half-time, Arsenal 4-0 up. You were happy as Larry. And then Newcastle, they struck back. 4-4. That's how it ended. And 2011 was the last time that in one of Europe's top five leagues, a team managed to rescue a point after being 4 goals down. Until Schalke this weekend against Borussia Dortmund, which I think was a game that was maybe a little bit overshadowed by Aubameyang gate. The easiest thing to say ever. but yeah, what's happening at Borussia Dortmund? Because they're massively underachieving in the Champions League.
Yeah, they're out of that.
Their manager, who is called... Let me remember, Peter Bosch. Yeah. Doesn't seem to have all his guns firing. And yeah, this Aubameyang thing is rumbling on as it has done for what I feel like is about 3 years.
Yeah, well, he got sent off, didn't he, in that game? It's really bizarre because at the beginning of the season, they didn't concede for the first 5 games. In the first 7, they'd only conceded 2 goals. And now only the bottom 3 teams and Gladbach have conceded more in the Bundesliga. So that's a complete swing. Like the starting the season so perfect. Again, they were struggling still in the Champions League. They haven't done well in any of the games, really, in that. Tottenham counter-attacked them and beat them, and have beat them twice now. But in the Bundesliga, they've still scored the most goals. And obviously, going 4-0 up, that shows that they've got attacking power. But to lose 4 goals in the second half against a Schalke team that, to be fair to them, the manager changed it. Their manager's only 32 years old, Domenico Tedesco. So it was really cool to see him manage to turn that around. But in terms of Dortmund, as you said, they've got so many things going on behind the scenes that is a reason why Tuchel left. And now with Peter Bosz, they've got more problems and they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, Boltwood, you saw Spurs, obviously being a Spurs fan, you saw them playing against Dortmund in the Champions League, beating them twice, didn't you?
Indeed.
Second one, I feel like their second half performance was terrible. Am I right?
Yeah, they weren't great, considering they went 1-0 up as well. Surrendering a lead in 2 games in a row is not great. And those were supposedly the 2 games where Peter Bosch had the chance to save his job. So it hasn't exactly gone particularly well for him. But, I mean, as Jake's saying, it's the defence's issue. They had these injuries and suspensions, which put an end to that run of incredible defensive solidity. He seems to be quite stubborn, Peter Bosch. He's sticking with Roman Bürki despite the fact that he seems quite unreliable. So he clearly doesn't know what he needs to do to fix the situation. And I think, you know, his time's up now. They're talking about a crisis meeting coming up. I think that could be the end for him.
Who do you put in there instead of him? Because Dortmund's a club where you kind of have to take on the whole club's philosophy, isn't it? It's not somewhere that does quick fixes because of the way they get all their money.
No.
So who do you put in?
I wonder if in the Bundesliga, do you reckon they have this this roundabout of managers of Pardew, Alan Dyce, Pulis, all just going around? They go anything like that. That's Pulis could come in, mate, I'm telling you.
David Unsworth. He'll get a chance in Dortmund and he'll do well. But generally, though, I think the best thing about the Bundesliga recently is the amount of young coaches that are getting a chance. Nagelsmann's done an incredible job at Hoffenheim. As I just mentioned, Tedesco, Schalke. Schalke are third in the league. And I remember a stat after sort of game week 10, so a while back now, but it was like their best start, the first time they've been second in so many years. And they're third now, and they've got a... Their midfield average age is 23, which is something that's really... They've got the likes of Goretzka. And I think Dortmund, it's almost hard to think of who the next manager will be, because not many people had heard of Tuchel before. Not many people have heard of Peter Bosz. He came from Ajax after doing well there. So in terms of saying, oh yeah, that's who they'll hire next... With a club like Dortmund, as you said, because of their philosophy and what they aim to do, it's really hard to try and pinpoint the next man for the job, but you've got a feeling it will be someone different soon.
Is it going to be someone who's 12 years old, Bowen?
Yeah.
Classic Bundesliga.
That's the trend, Jeremy. It'll get even more depressing.
It blows my mind that they go out of, you know, you only see a manager in one of three uniforms, right? You see him in the club tracksuit, you see him shirt and tie, or you see him in a suit. And these young strapping German 30 year olds coming in to manage, they're wearing like t-shirts and stuff,
turtlenecks. To be fair, Schalke made a t-shirt about the 4-4, so
the manager will be wearing that next
so
week.
Tedesco will be wearing that on the touchline next
Spurs,
week
there'll be a DVD out of it, getting right away.
Alright, let's move on to the next number, which is 92.7%, and that is the pass accuracy of Andreas Christensen. Did I get that? Christensen. There's a little Danish lesson for all you listeners out there on Deezer, iTunes, and everywhere else you can get your podcasts. Andreas Christensen, 92.7% pass accuracy in the Premier League, which is higher than any other Chelsea player this season. David Luiz pretty much has been outcast because of it, especially in the big games. And I have written down here on a piece of paper a stat about Christensen.
Come on then.
He is, apparently, according to this piece of paper... the first Chelsea Academy graduate to start and finish three games in a row since John Terry.
That is, wow.
How good does that make him, A, at playing football, and B, at loyalty to his teammates?
Surviving. Well,
it's a strange situation, though, because you just said, as you said there, that he Conte seems to have this falling out with Luis. Which game was that before? They had this little spat where Luis seemed to have questioned the tactics. Conte dropped him straight away.
Was it Champions League? Was it against Roma?
I remember him in the Roma game, his little, the three of them running alongside.
Oh, yeah.
He was definitely
he probably
in that
got
one.
Dropped after that one, to be honest.
Yeah, but there was obviously this issue there. So, I mean, clearly, Andreas Christensen is a very good player, but I think it suits Conte to bring him through now. Luis has been dropped. He's a fan favourite. Bringing Christensen through, who is a young player, which, as we've just pointed out, as it's on your paper there, that's a rare thing at Chelsea for them to come through. So I think it suits Conte. It doesn't allow people to question this decision. He's doing the job. The win percentage speaks for itself. So I think it suits Conte at the moment. I don't know how much credit you can give him essentially for bringing him through, because, you know, he's doing this to keep the fans on side, etc.
Here's a sentence. Christensen was at Mönchengladbach last year, wasn't he?
Yep, and he was there for 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So he's a Chelsea Academy graduate because they bought him so young, but he's been a beneficiary of the loan system, and he's proved that it does work. He was in the Bundesliga first team, and he was posting these sorts of numbers every week for Gladbach. And the best thing about it is, as well, I think, yes, the falling out with David Luiz is the reason why Christensen has come in. But when you see the games he's started, not just after this spat, he started both games against the Manchester clubs. He started against Spurs away and he started against Liverpool away. They're massive games. And for you to be trusting a 21-year-old at the centre of your back three rather than... I know David Luiz played in midfield in one game, but there's a different air of responsibility when you're that last defender. So for Conte to be picking a 21-year-old who doesn't seem to misplace a pass, he adds the security that you don't get with David Luiz. And David Luiz is 30 now, and he's still this erratic... I know it's easy to say about this like PlayStation-controlling FIFA defender, but that's what he is. That's what makes him so good, because he will do those last-ditch tackles and the erratic displays, and he might even score from 45 yards. But Christensen, you get this player that will get the ball, win the ball. He's deceptively quick as well, which is good for that middle centre-back position. So I've got a feeling he'll start playing more and more, and he might even start to replicate John Terry's career.
Did see they're saying David Luiz might be off to Real Madrid in January, so this could be the end of him if Christensen's coming through. But it is about time a young player did make it into the first team consistently, because I mean, has it got on your paper how many players they've got out on loan? Is it
587? 112,
yeah, something like that. That's what it sounds about, right, isn't it? So it's about time one of these players who's been out on loan comes through into the team and proves themselves, and he's obviously a very good player.
All right, let's go to Spain now, and the number three, which is the number of teams still unbeaten in La Liga, and one of these includes Simone Zaza, and I know I go on about it a lot, but I can't get over the fact that he was rubbish against Accrington Stanley.
Yeah.
But that's the most in any of Europe's top five leagues. Barcelona, Valencia, Atletico Madrid, first, second and third, respectively. Barcelona, despite all their perceived problems in the summer, what with the Neymar transfer, everything like that, they seem to be flying in the league. Mm. Then Valencia have come back from the brink of Gary Neville death to absolutely smash it so far this year. Got their draw against Barcelona, even if there was a dodgy over-the-line goal in there. Atletico Madrid, however, are not looking at their best, certainly not in Europe. Haven't lost, however, but don't seem to look like the force that they have been recently. And you obviously can't forget Real Madrid, who are hanging around in fourth place there. When they lost, they lost that
scoring streak as well as their 1-0 defeat to Betis. But yeah, the Atletico Madrid one's really strange, because to find them third, as you said, you usually get rave reviews and it's usually Griezmann grabbing headlines. Obviously, his last couple of games, broke his goal drought with that overhead kick that was incredible, and he scored again. He scored a couple and got an assist in their most recent game. But they've won 7 and drawn 6, and over the course of the season, even if you stay unbeaten, that you're starting to draw as many games
as
you win.
That's Invincibles-esque.
Yeah, you're not going to do as well. But even Arsenal in that Invincible season, that was 12 draws. So they're halfway there and we're not that far along. So Atletico Madrid, that's the sort of style of play that they go for. They grind out those results where it is close, and it could be a draw, it could be a win, but they're not losing. And that 13 games is actually their best ever unbeaten start to a season. So to be finishing third... to be third at the moment, ahead of these two players, other teams that are just scoring goals. Barcelona and Valencia are the top scorers in the league. Valencia themselves look really good attacking, counter-attacking team. So it's a mixture of styles up there, and Real Madrid, you can't forget about them, really.
Yeah. What do you think of Barcelona then, Boltwood? Because they're probably, they're the favourite in there, I think it's fair to say. Clear at the top. Didn't lose to Valencia, which, they didn't win, but they didn't lose. So they've had a great start, and they've only got more to come in terms of personnel, because eventually they've got Dembele coming back, and they've got a transfer window where they've got an awful lot of money they need to get through.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned it there, the issues they had in the summer, I think people are surprised by this start. There's obviously a lot of controversy surrounding the Neymar transfer. There's a lot of questions being asked of the club's hierarchy, whether they were taking the team in the right direction. A lot of questions over the transfer policy. I know Paulinho was a very unpopular player when he arrived. Couldn't even
great
do free kick-ups. Couldn't even do free kick-ups. But, he seems to be doing the job so far for Barcelona. So I'll be interested to see if they can maintain this in the league and also in the Champions League. It looks like PSG and Man City are the favourites in that competition. If Barcelona go out in the early rounds, you'd have to say the league is theirs over these other two teams, Valencia and Atletico Madrid. So I think it remains to be seen how they do in the other competitions on other fronts.
As well, I was just going to say that the thing is with these teams as well, is you've got Messi that's obviously dominated the early starts, but everything was said about Ronaldo not scoring, and Messi's only scored one goal. Minus the one that
I think it might be
7 or 8 games now, but it's in his last 25 shots he scored one goal, but he's moved over to his creative side again. So at the beginning of the season it was 12 goals, no assists, and now he's got, or not no assists, but it was that sort of disparity, and he's created 16 chances in his last 16 games, and it's 6 games, sorry. And it's that sort of switch that Barcelona, I still feel, are trying to find their identity under Valverde. They start the season and they're winning games, but now there's been another switch. Messi scored 12 in his first 10 games almost, and he's still got 12 goals. Whereas Zaza and Rodrigo Valencia, they've been involved in 20 between them. So the split of players, and it's just interesting to see whether Valverde has missed a trick in sort of moving Messi away from that position, or just seeing what happens when Dembele comes back. Because when I feel he does, then they'll get closer to that 4-4-3 where Neymar was involved, and they'll have two wingers and it'll be Suarez back through the middle.
He'll have to himself. Get De La Feo out of the team though.
Yeah. What a shame.
He'll manage, I'm sure.
Yeah, Unsworth will be knocking on De La Feo's door. Don't you want to come back?
Come
right
back.
Here. Well, let's bring it back. Let's bring it back to the Premier League. The number 26, and that's the number of years since Man United lost three consecutive away games to Arsenal. So they lost 3-0 under Van Gaal back in 2015. Then last year there was that 2-0 defeat towards the end, and then we've got it once again this weekend on Saturday, which you can listen to, by the way, on Deezer.
Fantastic. I'll be listening.
Bolt was going to be listening. He's going to be there with his headphones and his Deezer app listening to the game. But yeah, 26 years could be the first time ever they've lost three Premier League away games in a row to the same team. So, or to Arsenal.
To
anyway.
Arsenal, yeah.
To Arsenal, not to the same team. What do we reckon is going to happen this weekend, basically? Because it feels like Arsenal this weekend overcame quite a sort of, at least a mental barrier, getting above Spurs again. I don't want to, you know, I know people say, oh, Arsenal fans obsessed, everything like that, but they're back in fourth place, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I think, I feel like this weekend sort of crystallised it a little bit that I feel like it will be Man City at the top. I think they're definitely going to win the title. Manchester United second, Chelsea probably third. And it's going to be a race for that fourth spot between Spurs, Liverpool and Arsenal. As you say, Arsenal have leapfrogged Spurs now into that fourth position. Is it 11 home games in a row they've won?
Yeah, so there's obviously a couple of potential with they're playing midweek and then they can equal a record when they play Man United.
It's difficult because as you said, that it was a big win for them against Burnley. Last minute, somewhat lucky, you might argue, but nonetheless, it's great 3 points for them. There is this sense now they've put together a run. I think people weren't really considering them as top four contenders at the start of the season. Maybe they'd be in and around that conversation. But now I think if they can beat Manchester United this weekend, they'll almost be favourites to finish in the top four. I think the question mark is going to be over how Mourinho approaches this game. There's obviously been a lot of criticism of how he approaches games, the top six away from home. Is he going to go and be cautious with Pogba back? Is he going to be a little bit more enterprising? I think it all depends on Mourinho's tactics to see how this one's going to go.
Yeah.
So Jake, you're an Arsenal fan. You're a pained Arsenal fan. You've seen Arsenal over many, many years.
The full storms.
Look awful, then look really good, look like you're going to do well, then look awful again in November, nearly December now. Mm. So you've got 2 months until February, which notoriously is when the wheels come off.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're in for a really happy Christmas and a decent new year, but then a horrible February? Or is this going to be the new Arsenal that go on for the last 6 months of the season and do all right?
We're going to win a treble, I think. But genuinely, the November is usually a tricky month as well. And we've come out of that with some decent results so far. As I said, there's still two games that by the time this goes out will have been played, unfortunately. And then one at the weekend against Man United. And if we do win both of those, that will be our best ever winning streak at the Emirates since 2005. So that in itself, that's going back to the good old days in terms of Arsenal when they were dominant in the Premier League and when they were a great team to watch. So those numbers in itself, that's something to get excited about. But as you said, it's so hard to get excited because you know you're going to be brought back down to earth. And we've recently just signed this new head of negotiations that was at Barcelona.
Diamond Eye.
No. There's another new introduction into the backroom staff, which again is a good sign, but he's coming in February and we've got this whole January where we've got to try and...
Need it before then.
Yeah, exactly. We've got this whole February we need to try and negotiate Ozil Sanchez deals. And it's just a case of, will Ozil go to Man United in that summer?
Can you imagine? It'll be interesting to see if this weekend... That performance by Arsenal in the North London Derby, I was blown away by it as a Spurs fan. I haven't seen Arsenal play that well for a long, long time. But as Jake says, you see these performances every now and again from Arsenal, and they can't keep it up consistently. I think it will be a real statement if they can do it again against Manchester United, who are the closest team to challenging to Manchester City. If they do manage to beat them at home, I think it'll be a very big result for them.
Okay, then. While you all set reminders to listen to Arsenal versus Manchester United on Deezer, 5:30 on Saturday, let's move on to the next section.
I'm embarrassed to ask.
Right, lads. We all think that football has maybe got a little softer over the years. There's not as much physicality in there.
Okay.
But even the most prehistoric Jurassic football fans like me that believe that elbows have a higher place in football, a bigger place in football than feet do, can see that Romelu Lukaku probably should have at least been pinged up for a foul, if not banned retrospectively, for kicking bong, for hitting the bong, so to speak.
It was a great headline that came out, wasn't it?
So, why is it, and again, as a prehistoric Jurassic dinosaur West Ham fan who thinks everyone's in favour of the big teams, why is it that a Man United striker can basically take two swipes at a Brighton defender and then not get banned?
I don't understand this one. I found it really strange. I'm assuming the referee didn't see it at the time. It wasn't even featured on Match of the Day this weekend. Gary Lineker saying they missed it themselves when they were sort of watching the games at the time. But if it was reviewed for potential retrospective action, if you see that, surely it warrants punishment. But I'm baffled, to be honest.
I don't understand how they didn't see it, though, because, I mean, I would like to think that in a game that only had one goal in it, they'd have watched the replay. Well, and it seems to me like it's quite obvious.
Well, it's in the build-up to the goal, isn't it? It's in that corner. It's after that corner. And so the FA have referred it, and it's ex-Premier League referees that went to review it. And they had to unanimously say, I would have sent him off. And for some reason, they all haven't.
Howard Webb must have been there then.
And it just there's been already quite a few occasions this season where, so Mitrovic got banned for three games right at the beginning of the season for an elbow on Manuel Lanzini. And it was sort of that running pass. He definitely had a look at him. He put his elbow in his face. And yeah, it's the elbow to the face. And that might be why he got charged for it, three games. They showed that on Match of the Day as well. And I was looking at research of this, and that you were getting some very angry fans that were saying, he only got a three-match ban because it was shown on Match of the Day.
Right, right.
And it makes you think now that Lukaku's wasn't highlighted. I remember seeing and watching along and thinking, I even tweeted out, I was like, that's a bit strange that hasn't been shown, especially when it is in the build-up. Yeah. And then you just saw a stream of every other person watching it saying, why isn't it being shown?
Yeah, they mentioned it live, didn't they? Like quite a few times. They said, oh, that should have been brought up as a foul. So yeah. I can't understand how...
The extra strange thing is, if, you know, obviously there's been this spotlight on it in hindsight, not just because of the great headline, but because, you know, you think he should have seen punishment for that act. It sets a precedent now where if that does happen later on in the season, where there is retrospective action taken against a player for a similar sort of incident, everyone's going to point to this now, Lukaku escaping punishment, as reason why their player shouldn't be punished. So I think it sets a dangerous punishment precedent for the FA.
And the games he could have missed as well. Obviously,
Man
the
City
Watford game,
up, yeah.
the Watford game, the Arsenal game, and the Manchester derby. So that made it a really big call, didn't it?
Conspiracy theories about.
If you were reviewing that, you would have been sweating, because that is a massive call. Although Lukaku himself, one goal in his last six Premier League games.
Yeah, they'd have been stuck with stinky old Zlatan.
Yeah, the lion back up front, as he refers to himself. But it will be a chance now for Lukaku to... He's looked a bit frustrated this season towards the end. Like his shot numbers have gone down in these last six games. His expected goals have gone down. The amount of big chances he's got have gone down. So he's not scoring goals, but you'd say, are Man United providing him the platform in recent games to do that? With Pogba coming back... you'd like to see the chances created numbers going back up for Man United, but these big games to come, Jose Mourinho himself, when he sets himself about against big six sides away from home, especially for this Arsenal one, they've scored one goal in their last 10. Jose Mourinho as a manager against top six sides has scored four goals in his last 10 games. So he's got Lukaku and he didn't escape a ban, but is he even going to use Lukaku in this game to actually score?
Did you see the game? Did you see his shot in like the first 10 minutes? It's one-on-one and he puts it... I've never seen someone sky a one-on-one from the ground.
Yeah, but...
as high.
But he looked at the floor, so...
He looked at the floor and there was no kind of evidence
Trafford,
to say that...
That Old Trafford pitch is notorious for its divots.
Okay. It's a strange one with Lukaku, isn't it? Because as clinical as he was at the start of the season... This sort of, it's not a barren spell because he obviously scored recently, but there are still those question marks over his finishing ability.
And well, there are times he looks like a muppet, aren't
he? Yeah.
It's sort of such an incredible lack of composure, but then You know, he's playing for Belgium 2 weeks ago and scored a hat-trick, didn't he? Mm. And then he come back and got one against Newcastle.
He's not helped by playing in this Mourinho team. Like, that, he doesn't get the service that maybe does.
And that's what I think. I think at the beginning of the season, Mkhitaryan was moved centrally and everyone forgot that he played centrally, so didn't really bother about him, and Mkhitaryan was pulling the strings. His chances created numbers have dried up. Pogba got injured, which meant that there was no deeper penetration. They haven't got a right winger that's really any good at being a right winger. They play Mata out there. Jesse Lingard comes in. Recently, they've been trying Martial and Rashford in the same team, and I still think that dynamic's really skewed because
they've both
been playing on the left, and then you're trying to put one out wide. And the natural instinct there. So there's a lack of imbalance, and that's probably why Jose Mourinho ends up defending the games, because he thinks, I can set my team up that way solidly. Ashley Young left wing back, Valencia right wing back, three centre midfielders. He knows how to win that way. So Lukaku is a victim of it in himself, and he's been frustrated, and that's obviously come to the fore with him aiming two kicks at Bong.
So. Most accurate thing he did all day.
Yeah.
Am I right, lads? Basically, the moral of the story is, athletes, stop hitting the bong. Let's move on to who's this fella?
Who's this fella?
All right, do not for one second think I don't know who Gennaro Gattuso is. Who is this fella?
I remember him, yeah.
Gennaro Gattuso, the man who went toe-to-toe with Joe Jordan and somehow came out alive. hard bloke, also good at football, one of the key members of Beard Club, but not really got any considerable pedigree as a manager, but for whatever reason, AC Milan have drafted him in. Now, all I've seen so far of Gennaro Gattuso as a manager was a clip of him at a press conference when he was at Crete or something, and he was speaking in English, and he describes that his team sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
You like to say that?
I don't know. What's more offensive, the language or the accent? Yeah. Yeah, that's all I've seen of Gennaro Gattuso's managerial career. Is he even in Italy now? What's he been doing? Who's he been managing?
He's literally in Italy right now.
How is he qualified? Or is it just a Zidane situation? It was like, he was a good player. He'll make a good manager. Also, he's mental and hard, so he'll probably scare everyone.
You've nailed it. I saw the press release and that's what they said. AC Milan
said,
they
did say that actually. He's an Italian.
He was the most mental and or hard candidate we could find, so we drafted him in.
Why not?
But the reason he got this job was because he was actually managing AC Milan under 19s beforehand, so it's sort of one of those in club
scared group of boys.
It's one of those in club promotions, and in terms of managerial pedigree, it's not really pedigree because they're quite low, as you said, a club in Crete. He managed Palermo when they were in Serie B for a bit, and he's recently managed Pisa.
Sounds like he's just been on nice places to go on holiday.
Exactly. But the most outstanding stat of his career, I think, as a manager so far is, so he got relegated from Serie B last season, which obviously isn't a good start.
Mug.
but they actually conceded the second fewest goals in the division. They conceded 36 in a 42 game season, but they only scored 23, which was the fewest.
Did they have a leaning tower up front and just hope to hit it? All right, I'm so alone. I'm going to sit in the corner while Boltwood whacked his lyrical.
I didn't want to give it any sort of credit. It's a very strange one. I think we can all agree. I think of the four teams he's managed, he's lost more games at three of them. I think it's a very strange point. Obviously, it didn't work out for Montella, who they sacked earlier this week. I think he himself said, you know, the expectation for raising the summer, over £200 million spent. I think AC Milan fans and the club's owners thought they'd be challenging for that top four position for a Champions League place, like Inter Milan are doing this season. But it hasn't really worked out. I think, you know, Montella struggled to find the cohesion between the new players, to find a system that worked. Is Gattuso going to be the answer? Probably not. I think, you know, a lot is riding for the club's owners at the moment. In terms of financial situation they find themselves in qualifying for the Champions League, they're not going to make the top four as it stands. There's far better teams ahead of them who are definitely going to get those positions. Are they going to focus on the Europa League now? Is that the most likely route to get through the Champions League? I'm not sure. I'm sure under Gattuso they'll be more defensively sound, but I don't think they're going to achieve the aims that they want to this season.
Is he permanent?
So it's not it's not been officially said like he will get it for the next 2 years or whatever, but at the moment they've
till the end of the season.
Watched AC Milan fan TV, they say give it Gattuso. Yeah. The they listened, so, and there he is.
He's got the job for a bit.
It's 18, yeah.
I don't think they're going to commit to him, because AC Milan's problem this season has been scoring goals, and they've just hired a manager that, so his record for the under 19s was a bit better. They'd played 10 and scored 13, conceded 11, which again, it's that fine margins that have sort of punctuated his career. And I think overall as a manager, he's got a negative goal difference because he's managed poor clubs. But it's close. It's not like they're shipping 500 goals and he's scoring 100. It's very close. I think it's 100, 110 and 130, those sorts of numbers. But AC Milan's problem is scoring goals, and they failed to score in a game against Torino, the most recent game at home. And that was the fourth consecutive home game in Serie A they failed to score. And that was the third time in their history that's happened, in 2007 and in 1984. So that's where they're struggling, and they're bringing in a coach whose experience lies in
being mental and hard.
Mental and hard, and not conceding any goals and scoring very few as well.
It seems especially weird to me, given that Ancelotti's unemployed out there and he's won the Champions League with him like 90 times, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think that's the correct statistic. There just seems to be a lot of uncertainty at the moment around the owners. They seem to be refinancing the loan deal they took out in order to buy the club in the first place. It's all a little bit up in the air. So we could see a situation next summer where the club changes hands. Someone could come in and try and flip the club. There could be new owners. I think that's probably what someone like Ancelotti is waiting for. If there are new owners who come in with a new business plan and a new direction, someone like Ancelotti could be lured to the club, or potentially Conte, I think, would be a great candidate. He's spoken before about how he's not going to be in England forever. He'd like to return to Italy. That could be an appointment that makes sense.
Yeah, basically, being an AC Milan fan, sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. Yeah,
mainly shit.
Well, that mainly good segue leads us nicely into the stats showdown.
Oh, dear.
Stats showdown. All right, Boltwood, you're the big dog in the yard.
God.
But you're a mere virgin when it comes to the stats showdown. Imagine.
In many ways.
Let me describe the scene. You're sitting there. Have you seen Good, the Bad and the Ugly?
Yeah, great film.
So you know about... the three of them, Eli Wallach, Lee Van Cleef. I was going to say Cliff Richard, but it's Clint Eastwood.
Pretty
they're
sure
they're standing there
Cliff
staring
Richard.
Each other down. But imagine that Lee Van Cleef is a mere arbiter. He's just a judge.
Yeah.
You and Eli Wallach are going to shoot at each other. You've got three bullets.
Pow, pow.
They're all stats.
Okay.
I think best out of three wins.
I think I'm going to fire some blanks, to be honest with you.
Okay. And that confidence is why I'm going to give you the first shot.
Oh, God. So, let's see how this goes. So I thought, as a Spurs fan, I wanted to come up and, try and bring up Spurs. But we didn't speak about Spurs at all, so I'll try and bring up some Spurs stats. So I was going to try and impress you with a stat about Harry
Just
Kane.
Just sixth place Spurs.
Listen, I was going to try and impress you with a stat about Harry Kane. Did you know, Rob, that Harry Kane has been involved in 100 Premier League goals in his 128 games in the competition, 87 goals and 13 assists? That's the ninth fastest player to reach that milestone. I did try to look for number one. Couldn't find it.
Alan Shearer.
Oh, there you go. Jeez, that bodes well, doesn't it? I'm in trouble, aren't I?
I mean, that does mean there's eight faster than him. Jake,
basically.
I reckon, fair play.
Harry Kane's really good.
He's basically. Really, really good.
Get it.
But there were eight faster. And I imagine Jake's got something
he's got
nice and niche.
Oh, here we go.
I'll go with a sort of ranking, a Premier League ranking history. And
it's not take-ons, though.
No, not take-ons. I've moved away from those. But Eric Cantona has been knocking around recently.
He has.
So I thought I'd look at him a bit. And recently, I think Man United recalled the wrong number seven to sort of celebrate, because in terms of assists per game in Premier League history, Eric Cantona is fourth on the list with 0.359. Above him in third is Angel Di Maria on 0.37. And this is a minimum of 10 Premier League assists because it gets ridiculous. But above him, to carry on the stat, if you would like to know.
Antonio Valencia?
Nope. Dimitri Payet.
Wow.
I know that was going to upset you, but he did it at West Ham. So West Ham are second best assists per game in Premier League history, if you look at it that way. And obviously Kevin De Bruyne is top by miles.
That was way more interesting.
That was more interesting.
I was fascinated by it.
Yeah, Jake, you're one of them. Jake, you can kill this dead now. I don't think we've had a 3-0 before, but I reckon we might.
I will go towards Serie A now.
Sometimes maybe good. Sometimes
I hope this is more of the good. It's focusing on a man called Mauro Icardi, who's been very, very good this season. And his goals, 15 goals in Serie A this season, have been worth 13 points to Inter Milan. And 13 points would actually put him 14th in Serie A.
Wow. Okay. That is good.
That's pretty good as well.
Boltwood.
Good God.
Please.
So, obviously, we're recording this on a Monday, maybe a Tuesday, I'm not sure. Our project's right. But obviously, Everton under a lot of criticism for not hiring a full-term manager. They've still got David Dunsworth, as I like to call him. He's still been there 34 days, he's been the caretaker manager.
And what are 34 days?
But did you know what the record is for a caretaker manager being in charge of a Premier League club?
Is it, what, the longest?
Longest caretaker taking charge of a club. I can tell you, Rob.
Joking it?
No. Oh. It's David Pleat at Tottenham. He was caretaker manager for 256 days from September 2003 to June 2004.
That's a whole season.
I did the mind-blown thing. Is. You can't see that on the
That's quite good.
That's the record.
Do you know what? Because you're definitely going to win the third one.
Oh, that's pressure, that is.
Do I get it?
But you can have that. You can have that.
I'm happy. I'm done. I can die happy now.
You're Dunsworth.
Exactly.
But no, you've got to follow up now. This is your chance. This is your
now. This one's a bit
he might have an incredible stat for number three. Yeah. Now, can you imagine?
This one's a bit rope, yeah.
The underdog story of a lifetime.
Yeah.
So, on the Everton theme, it looks like Big Sam's coming in as we record on a Monday or a Tuesday. Currently, I need to bring up the table. Currently, Everton, after 13 games, have a total of 12 points.
They do.
So, if we look at Big Sam's points per game ratio, or average points per game in the Premier League, it's 1.28 per game.
Yes.
So if you times that by the amount of games he's got left if he comes in, which let's assume Everton are going to lose to West Ham in the week. I'm sure you'd
brave
agree
assumption.
That's definitely going to happen. So he's going to have, how many games do we have left?
He'd have 24.
24.
Yeah.
So that means, this is torturous, that West Ham are going to finish on average, if I had Everton, sorry. Jesus, this has gone badly. But that means Everton are going to finish on 42 points. If Big Sam comes in, which means he's going to save them, he's going to maintain his record of never being relegated from the Premier League, finishing on 42 points, he's above the magic number of 40. Boom. Big Sam is going to save Everton.
Don't think it was above the magic number for West Ham, though, was it? In 2003, didn't we get relegated on 42? Or did Bolton have 42? I think maybe we had 40.
I don't know what you're talking about, mate. I don't remember that.
So your statistic...
Big Sam is going to save Everton,
which
that's
is
what I'm saying.
Basically a posh word for fact, was yeah. based on pure speculation.
I added up a bunch of like hypothetical numbers and tried
to... took a really long time counting.
I tried my best. I'm sorry, guys.
Jay, he's open. He's on the floor begging
I'm
for
on the
forgiveness.
Ropes.
You've,
on the
got,
ropes.
You've got the stat gun pointing straight between his eyes. Put him out of his misery like old Yeller.
I'm going to go for an Arsenal Man United one.
Okay.
And a specific, well. It's quite a nice little ironic story, this one.
Ironic story.
He's already won.
Also not a stat.
Yeah. No, it's a statistic. If Danny Welbeck scores in that game on Saturday.
Yeah.
He'll have more Premier League goals for Arsenal against Man United than he ever managed for Man United against Arsenal. 3-2.
I prefer mine, mate.
You didn't blow me out of the water like I thought you would,
Jay. Go on, mate. I blew you out of the water, my mental arithmetic.
Just based on the fact that Boltwood lied. I'm not impressed by that stat, Jake.
Are you not?
The fact that it was a fact... A statistic.
Yeah, you're right.
And not a long drawn out series of numbers that are
hypothetical
proved by anything.
Problem. Yeah, no, you're right, actually. Yeah, you're right.
You get the win.
Oh, God. I have to consider.
You get the win by the skin of your teeth.
I know, I was going to say.
On a
different day.
You would have lost.
If only I came with an actual stat.
Imagine if he'd come armed with three stats.
This is my
you
problem.
You had seven, didn't you?
No, I did. I have too many to... So I went for that one towards the end.
I didn't have enough. I was really scrabbling around.
I went for that one
numbers.
Towards the end because I thought, as you said, it was definitely a statistic. So
yeah. He played it safe and it's paid off.
I've done a Jose Mourinho. I did what I needed to
Fair
do.
Play.
And some people call you the Jose Mourinho of Twitter. Where can they find you to find very pragmatic and safe tweets?
Safe tweets are at Jake Entwistle, E-N-T-W... I S-T-L-E.
There's never an H. His name never changes. Wow. And Boltwood, if people want to find long, drawn-out stories and a really poor use of the new 280-character limit, yeah, where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood or on the Front Three Football Podcast.
It's a different podcast. It is. Just like this one. But you can subscribe to that and you can subscribe to ours.
Subscribe to all of them.
On Deezer or iTunes or anywhere where you find podcasts. Mm. We're all podcast friends here. And you can find me on Twitter, my tweets. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. They're all at Rob Armstrong _ WH. I'll probably be there on Saturday, 5:30, listening on Deezer to Arsenal v Man United. Get the plugs in. Get the plugs in for the lads. We'll see you next week where there'll be more plugs for stuff.
Defending in Numbers is a Deezer Originals production. You can find and download more episodes on Deezer and all major podcast providers.